becoming fixed and dangerous. Every new blaster that had been acquired by Trader, whether second-hand or fresh from a stockpile, had been stripped, cleaned, and greased before being reassembled and tested, then being handed out for use in an everyday or combat situation. And regular stripping and cleaning became even more important in some areas of the Deathlands. The nuke-riddled landscape and tainted air meant that in some areas the blasters were more susceptible to severe conditions. Blasters, thought cleaned and greased, were prone to corrosion and drying out, conditions that made combat dangerous. Many had bought the farm from a misfiring or exploding blaster, but not many of those had traveled with Trader. So JB was interested to see how the armory at Raw would cope with this, given that the celebrations had begun almost as soon as they arrived back, and many in the newly constituted raiding party had been forcibly turned from their beds, and even now were showing signs of still recovering from their drunkenness. This was no idle curiosity. He knew that his own weapons were in the best condition. He knew that Ryan also kept his weapons that way. As for the others in their party, none would have survived as long as they had without that discipline being second nature. Neither would Ryan allow any to endanger the others by risking a misfire during a combat situation. They could back up one another all the way, but now they were also dependent on the inhabitants of Raw, a vill of which they knew very little. Therefore, JB resolved to keep an eye on the armory, to spot any weak points and, if necessary, step in, to ensure his friend's safety as much as that of the Raw dwellers. When he arrived at the armory, he found that the small group of men and women who acted as armorers were hard at work. There were five of them, two men and three women. The men were stacking small piles of Plasex and Grens to be distributed, while a selection of hand blasters, semi-automatics, machine guns, and rifles were neatly laid against the wall, the women working their way through the task of cleaning them with as much rapidity and accuracy as they could muster. JB was pleased to see that everyone seemed to have checked their blasters in for maintenance. On his previous visits, JB had been treated distantly but politely, even though his vast knowledge had been recognized. One of the female armorers looked up briefly from the blaster she was greasing.
"Welcome, friend."
She was small and rotund, with apple cheeks that should have marked her down as a cook rather than the mechanic she undoubtedly was.
"Have you come to aid us in this preparation?"
"If you want. You didn't seem too keen when I came around before."
"Nothing personal. Just as we like to keep to our own tasks is all. But if you know your business, then we can use you now."
"Be glad to help."
She held up the stripped blaster she was holding.
"Just as a matter of interest, what would this be?"
JB eyed the blaster before replying. It was a large weapon, of the type used for static positions rather than carrying in combat. Just from that, the armorer was able to guess part of Harvey's tactic for the raid. But that was for another time. For now, JB grinned.
"That's a light machine. RPK, drum-fed. Supposed to go on a tripod, which I guess you've got stacked somewhere. Shit useless on the run, but okay if you mount it somewhere to provide cover. Of course, it's supposed to do 660 rounds a minute, but it never works that way because the stupid bastards who designed it didn't figure on how hot the barrel would get. You do too much, and the mother heats up the ammo in the drum and sets it off. Then you can't stop it firing, no matter what, and you got no control over it."
"You sit your ass down here and start helping, son."
JB's wry grin broke into a smile as he joined her. He felt confident that no matter what the state of the people in the raiding party, the blasters and Grens wouldn't let them down. In a few short hours, the party was ready to leave. The previous day's party of 20 sec men had assembled, minus the injured man who was still unconscious in the hospital unit. Alien headed the 19, bringing them to 20. With Ryan's party, minus the missing Dean, they numbered 26. Added to this were 30 men and women from Raw, all taken from their regular tasks in order to augment the raiding party and give strength in numbers to the attack on Sampvogel. Jack looked at Ryan as they assembled in the main hall for a briefing from the Baron.
"Sure I'll know what doing?"
"If they match Alien for courage, even if not for fighting skill, then they'll be hard enough to chill. What we've got to think about is the strengths of Sampvogel."
While they exchanged these comments, Christy was looking around the hall for Jenna. The Baron's wife was nowhere to be seen, which wasn't what Christy would have expected from her on the verge of such a battle. But then again, that completely summed up Jenna's attitude to her husband and to her people. All the same, the flame-haired woman would have liked to have had Jenna where she could see her for as long as possible, for she was sure that the Baron's wife was holding Dean captive, and she wanted Jenna to have as little time as possible with the boy until they were able to find him. Mildred, too, was unhappy about unfinished business.
John, do you think it would be possible for one of us to stay behind and look for Dean?
The armorer tried to hide his surprise.
How the fire-blasted hell would we be able to work that?
I don't know. But if only Jenna and Harvey know what's happened to Dean, they couldn't say much about another one of us going missing without giving themselves away.
The armorer polished his spectacles before placing them back on the bridge of his tanned and scarred nose.
I suppose so. But with all these people around, you've left it a bit late to just slip away. We're going to have to roll with this.
Meanwhile, Alien was outlining the situation to his people, skimming over the potential destructiveness of the nuke in favor of the advantages of getting it away from the muties. He then had Harvey outline the plan of attack. Two scouting parties would go in advance of the main group, in order to prevent any outriding parties from Sontvogel spying the main party and taking advance warning back to the Ville. Once at the valley, they would surround and attack as soon as they could get in position, using the RPKs and Grens to blow an advance path for the first warriors down the slopes and into the heart of the Ville. It all seemed straightforward enough, but relied heavily on surprise and not allowing the Sun Children time to defend their Ville. If Harvey had a contingency, then he was keeping it to himself for now, which to Ryan's mind was a bad idea. Any force could only be effective if it had a clear idea of what it was doing. Then again, it did cross the One-Eyed Warrior's mind that this would be the perfect opportunity to accidentally get rid of Alien if Harvey and Jenna had any notions of ridding themselves of the Baron. Finally, Alien mentioned the disappearance of Dean, asking if anyone had seen the boy since the night before. From the muttered conversations, Ryan and his people gathered that few had any clear recollections at all of the previous night, let alone if they had seen a lad they barely knew. It was unsatisfactory to leave the situation like that, but Ryan and his companions were forced to let the matter rest, at least for now. It was daylight above ground. The forest was lit with a radiant twilight glow that was as bright as the day would ever be. The humidity was intense, and Doc could almost feel the drops of moisture in the air, causing him to wipe his face every few minutes. Moreover, as he breathed, the air seemed to scald his lungs, making him cough. He could almost see the droplets as a fine drizzling rain around him. Mildred had hung back to keep an eye on Doc, wary of how the trek would affect him, hitting such humidity so soon after so much alcohol, lack of rest, and the psychological stress he had endured when remembering the nuke. Doc was incredibly strong, but had moments of contrasting fragility that meant he always walked a tightrope, balancing precariously. The last thing Mildred wanted was for Doc to fall off the rope at that moment. They were in the center of the group that marched through the forest, using the well-worn paths. They had already passed the area where the previous day's firefight had taken place, picking their way over the corpses that were still strewn across the path. The Sun Children hadn't returned to claim their dead, and the corpses were already bloated and rotting in the heat, swollen with gases that emerged as moans when the dead meat was touched by a passing foot, making the ordinary Ville dwellers jump with fright, and the hardened Sekhmen laugh. It helped to relieve the tension for the Sekhmen, who in their view had a whole heap of inexperienced chill fodder to nursemaid, as well as attend to their own task. The sickly sweet smell of death blended with a sense of the flowers, following them for some way down the path. Christie had noticed how the creepers across the forest floor had already started to entwine around the corpses, preparing to bury them beneath, turning them to mulch that would fertilize the earth. The party was large, and even moving as silently as possible made a considerable sound in the quiet forest. That made Ryan uneasy. He looked back over his shoulder and caught JB's eye. The armorer made a small inclination of his head, a minute gesture that communicated his displeasure with the circumstances of their progress. The sounds of the creepers and of the moving undergrowth could mask any sounds made by an ambush party. Ryan had mentioned that to Alien as they began their journey, but the Baron had deferred the matter entirely to his sect chief. Harvey listened to Ryan's concerns, then dismissed them out of hand.
Those fuckers will be back in their shit pit still licking their wounds and asking their dumb god what the fuck to do, Cyclops. Trust me, I've been here all my life, and you ain't been here for shit.
There had been an implied threat and put-down in the words that Ryan noted, but chose to ignore for now. At one time, his hot blood and temper would have pushed him into a fight with the Sec Man. But now there was too much at stake for a battle with an uneasy ally. Save that score for later. So Ryan and his people concurred with Harvey and joined the vast war party as it transformed.